Bandwidth for the iPhone LA podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone LA podcast, episode 26 for October 27th, 2008. Bright Kite, it's for the stalkers. All right, it's 10 p.m. on a Sunday night, which means it's time for the iPhone LA podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me from the Mac Observer is Mr. Jeff Gamet. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, I'm Mr. now. I'm moving up in the world.
You are Mr. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Thanks for being here.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, even though it's way past my bedtime.
You get up at what, like 4 a.m.?
I get up at 5 in the morning.
5 in the morning. That's dreadful.
That's the price. Yeah, it's the price I pay for living on East Coast time, but living in Denver.
Well, we appreciate you joining us past your bedtime. So hopefully you won't get too behind on your sleep. And also,
sorry, if I start snoring, just, you know, smack the microphone. Wait.
I'll smack it. I'll produce a very high pitched frequency, and you'll jump right up.
I bet I will.
Everyone will. And also from iProng Magazine, Mr. Bill Palmer's here. Hello, Bill.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, taking a break from watching the Home Run Derby. Or is that the World Series? Every time I look up, it's another home run. I don't know what's going on, so glad to be here.
Thanks for being here. And also from the MacCast, Adam Christensen's here. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Hanging in there. It's Sunday night.
Yep. And lastly, from the Apple Universe podcast, Daniel Brusilowski's here. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
It's great having you. It's about time. You're one of the people who kept poking and prodding me to start the podcast, so it's about time that I got you on.
Thank you for having me. And I asked you to say that I'm from the mothership. So, yes, I'm from the mothership.
Are you from the mothership tonight?
Yes, because I'm in the Silicon Valley, so.
That's true. Well, Adam is too, right?
Adam's in L.A., right?
No, that would be Bill.
Bill's in L.A. Adam, where are you? You're in...
I'm further south.
Further south? Okay. All right.
Adam likes to keep an insane distance from the insanity.
Yes.
I'm in San Diego, just north of San Diego, actually, but North County, cool. San Diego.
And Jeff, you're in Denver, right?
Right.
Cool. All right. And I'm in near Chicago, Illinois. So anyway, with that out of the way, let's talk about, because we were having our little pre-show discussion, and we were starting to talk about some public transportation. So that brings us right into some cool new things that were discovered in the latest seed of the iPhone 2.2 beta. I think it was the latest. I think it was beta 2. Now included in the Google Maps application is public transportation and walking directions, which is something we talked about a little while ago on a previous show about how Google was obviously adding that. And I found it very, very handy for when I go into Chicago, just because, you know, I don't sound like an idiot when I go in there and I call up a friend and say, what train should I take? Now I know. Now I can just say, you know, I want to get from point A to point B, and I want to, you know, take public transportation. And it tells me that I want to, you know, take the red line from the loop and, you know, go out to this stop, and now I know exactly where to go. So it's pretty great. Do you guys, Adam or Bill, do you guys have the public transportation thing set up for your Google Maps out there?
I was using that. I was looking for a hotel for Macworld Expo, and I was thinking about a new hotel, and all those streets around the convention center are one way, so it let me map it and see how far it is. And it says, oh, it's a mile and a half away, and I'm like, that can't be in a mile and a half. And of course, it's got me going like in a total square backwards and stuff. And so I try to drag it around, and it starts looking at one of those goofy maps of 17 U-turns.
Yeah.
And then I finally saw it. Oh, you can do walking. I'm like, okay, it's 0.3 miles. Yeah, I'll book that. So plus, as we were saying before the show, I don't drive here in LA, and I'm still fairly new to town. So that's just a huge thing for me to be able to get walking directions.
Oh, yeah.
Throw in the train too.
Yeah, that's great. And another thing, what was that?
Sorry, I was going to say they do have them here in San Diego as well. I just actually noticed them the other day. and remembered you mentioning them and checked it out. And I have to say that the public transit directions were amazing because it kind of picked up on what current time was.
Yeah.
And where I was, and was like, okay, the next bus, you know, to where you want to get to is here. Then you transfer here and to this bus and going this direction. And it was very clear. So I'm curious to know from somebody who has actually used them, if they're truly that accurate, but if they're as accurate as they seem to be, it's an amazing feature and would be even more useful in your pocket, you
absolutely
know,
yeah.
rather than from your desk or something like that, because you if things change, you know, if you get delayed somewhere along the route, you could just figure out what the next step is.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Bay Area, we have a transit system called Caltrain, mm-hmm. which goes from San Jose to San Francisco, and that's usually what I take to get into San Francisco. And instead of actually using Google Maps and doing that, they actually have an Ajax site, which a member of like the Caltrain community set up called iCaltrain, and it's like this really cool Ajax interface where you put in your start stop, your end stop, and then on a weekend or a weekday since the schedule changes, and it tells you how long the trip is and what time it is. So I actually don't use Google Maps. I use all like iCaltrain, and then BART has its own application and Muni has its own application. So I'm happy with that.
The really cool thing about, you know, using the Google Maps though, and I'm sure that, you know, especially since Google is, you know, out there, they have it set up where it will link the BART and the Caltrain all together, where you can just say,
oh yeah, it does that.
It does do that. Yeah. See, that's just fantastic. And, you know, like I said, I used it in Chicago for getting various places, and it's really great. And it's made it so much easier to navigate now. So I don't feel like a newbie when I go in there. And also they've added, we've been discussing that, I think in the last beta, they had some stuff in there, but it wasn't turned on for Google Street View. And now in this latest beta, they do have a Street View in there as well, which is fantastic. So now you know what stuff looks like, and you can have fun with that. I don't know. I looked at the pictures of it, and it's got a little circle in the lower right hand corner of, you know, the actual map section you're looking at as you're looking at the live Street View. I don't know. It'd be really cool if it could actually do GPS tracking as well with that. And I don't know how useful that would be. I guess if you added in, I mean, I guess they have enough technology there, especially with now with the Street View, that it could be a really good turn-by-turn GPS aided maps and directions and stuff like that. Do you think we're going to see something like that from Apple, or do you think it's going to be from a third party after all?
Just depends on how hands-on or hands-off Apple ends up being as far as certain features that they're going to bring to the iPhone. I mean, in the beginning, we thought it was all hands-on, but then they opened it up to the App Store, but then they've turned around and said certain things. No, we're not going to let third parties do that, and we assume those things are going to happen in-house eventually. So it just depends on which way the wind is blowing in Cupertino.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You know, I would prefer that Apple do the turn-by-turn directions themselves in, you know, so it's fully integrated into the Google Maps, and it would make a lot more sense. And it's kind of, you know, what Apple likes to do is, you know, use their own technologies to just kind of, you know, add features to what they have already instead of allowing a third party to do that, because it wouldn't be as graceful, obviously. You would have to, I don't think that third-party developers, at least right now with the SDK, have a way to interface directly with a map. So they would have to bring up their own map. So if some company decides to make their own third-party GPS tracking thing, they would have to pull their maps from, you know, something else, because Apple doesn't have a way to just give developers a map that they can overlay onto whatever. So, I mean, right now with what they have in the Maps application, it's fantastic. It's one of my favorite apps that are included in the iPhone, and I think that it would be, I think Apple should add the turn-by-turn in there themselves. I think it would be the best solution, because it would be kind of weird for consumers to be like, hey, you know, I want to do the turn-by-turn, but I have to go to the App Store and I have to find the correct application, download it, and then whenever I want something besides, you know, just standard maps, you know, I want turn-by-turn, I would have to go to this other application, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think, you know, The most sensible way to go about it is, I think, Apple adding it to the Maps application. And so, let's move on. Oh, go ahead.
Before you move on, the one question I've always had about that is, and I'm not a GPS user, so this is more a naive question from me not owning any kind of GPS. But typically, I've often heard people say that they have to sometimes buy maps or buy updated maps for GPS units. Is that the case or not the case?
You know, that depends on what type of system they have. Like, if you want to be able to just say, hey, I want to find directions to Starbucks or, you know, something like that, or I want to find Italian restaurants near my area, a lot of times that data won't be coming from, say, Google Maps or from a database that's downloading on the fly. That'll be a set of CDs or DVDs in your trunk. And so as businesses change and these companies will end up outputting a new set of disks like every year or so. So for some of those systems, yes, you'll have that. But my assumption would be if Google is doing this, they would be going from their own Google Maps database. So instead of having to have a regularly updated set of data that stays on your iPhone all the time, it'll just do it like it does it now.
Yeah. Now, the one concern I'm thinking about...
Advantage to Apple doing, right? Sorry.
What were you saying?
So that'd be another reason to have Apple provide the data rather than some third party.
Yeah, because then you'd have to always be updating your list of whatever. Although they could conceivably just stream it down, you know, like the current Maps application does. But, you know, then again, it'd just be reinventing the wheel. The one thing that I'm concerned about, though, is have you guys actually used your iPhone in the car for more than, you know, a few minutes to get the little GPS thing up and have it actually plugged in to power?
It's ridiculously slow.
Well, it's a little slow, but the thing that I've
actually... It's lacking.
The thing I've noticed, which is more of a disappointment than that even, is that... At some point, because you're drawing so much power, I suppose, is even though you have it plugged in, it still starts to drain power from the iPhone battery, even though you're plugged in. So the little icon will go from charging to charged, and it'll start sucking battery from the phone. And so that may be one of the things that Apple needs to address before they actually add that into the phone. I don't know if it's a hardware or a software problem. Have you guys noticed this at all? Daniel, have you?
I've never used my iPhone plugged in like that.
Okay, yeah. So yeah, because I've done, you know, when I go into Chicago or whatever, I always want to make sure that, you know, I just know where I am in the trip. So I have that, you know, kind of set up on my dash or in my lap or whatever, and plug it in, and you know, that just, or if I'm even using tethering, sometimes it'll do the same thing because I'll either plug it into my laptop or I'll plug it into a cigarette adapter. Just, you know, to get some power so it doesn't completely die, but at some point it'll stop charging and start draining. And I've even had my iPhone replaced to see if that was the problem, and it's still doing the same thing. And I don't know.
Sorry, go ahead, Mike.
No, go. You're fine.
Just on the topic of batteries, this company called Richard Solo, which the former CEO and founder of Sharper Image. He started this new company called Richard Solo, and they make, I think, the best external iPhone battery. And it just plugs right in, and I think it charges for like 10 hours, and I think it's the best one out there right now. So the company's called Richard Solo. I don't remember the URL. I'll look that up.
Richard S. what? How do you spell that?
S-O-L-O.
Oh, okay, Solo. Okay.
Yeah, so it's richardsolo.com.
RichardSolo.com. And so it's just a battery. What does it look? Does it snap on the back like the Mophie or?
No, you just put it in through the USB thingamajig on the bottom.
The dot connector. Does it work for other phones or other things, or is it just?
Yeah, it works for the iPhone and the iPod.
Okay, so it's RichardSolo.com. Do you know how much that is? The battery.
It's $50.
$50, and you said it'll.
Yeah.
It adds 10 hours of. Have extra time to your phone?
I'm looking exactly how much.
That's the one that looks like the little, like the Bluetooth headphone adapters and the camera adapter, right? It looks like a little brick that kind of hangs off the bottom of the dock connector.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw it.
Do you feel safe throwing your iPhone in your You feel safe throwing your iPhone in your pocket with that plugged in? Because I tested one that was in Kensington, sort of.
Yeah, see,
yeah, it kind of threw me off.
No, I would never put it in my pants.
So was it what was the concern there with that? Is it just getting hot or?
No, I just wasn't sure about the stability. It just kind of it adds an extra inch or two of height to, like you wouldn't necessarily throw an iPod in your pocket with an FM transmitter connected, something like that.
Yeah, that's true. I did something funny when I was on a train in downtown Chicago with the Kensington battery thing, the external that actually has a cable that you run through it. I just, you know, because I was using the phone in the car to do the NetShare thing, and at some point it, you know, did what I was saying is, you know, it stopped charging. So I wanted to, you know, top off my phone before I, you know, got downtown and all that. So I actually had the phone connected to the battery in my pocket. So I had a wire stringing across me from one pocket to another. I looked like a total dork. I don't know why I didn't just, like, keep it in the same pocket.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, this stuff with the batteries, like, you know when you go through the Carousel of Progress at Disney World and you get to the one from the 19-whatevers, but there's electrical wires just strung all over the house because it's just a million wires and there's electricity. Somebody's going to look back at us and laugh, what do you mean, battery life? What do you mean your phone had a battery that didn't last 6 years? What do you mean you had to charge it every day? Your laptop only lasted 5 years. We're going to be the laughingstock of a future generation because how desperate we are just to get battery life and bandwidth. Like it's some kind of hot commodity, like we just found oil and it's coming in tiny little increments.
Well, hasn't Intel recently demonstrated their power through the air technology? Adam, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, but I mean, that's technology that's been around since 60s or 70s, maybe even earlier. I mean, they've been talking about that for a long time. So,
well, haven't they? They've actually got it like working well and not, you know, like killing, you know, animals in between the transmission of it.
Ben Franklin found that one with a kite a while back.
It's still not scalable.
I've got this image.
Size.
I have this image in my head of someone turning on the hair dryer in their bathroom, and then like a dog outside explodes.
I was thinking
that'll
duck,
be in the
yeah.
Carousel of Progress too.
on the Richard Solo products, it looks like it's $49.95 for the basic one. Add another $5 if you want the flashlight, because I guess there aren't enough free flashlight apps for the iPhone, but
yeah,
they do have one little flashlight on the mountain. I guess if your battery's dead, you can't use your iPhone flashlight, so that might actually come in handy.
Cool. All
but
right.
What's cool about the Richard Solo is that what you can do is you can plug the actual Richard Solo into your iPhone, and then you can charge the Richard Solo while it charges the iPhone. So just through one cable, you can charge both devices.
That's cool. Now, okay, so speaking of things that require external battery packs, let's talk about Quick on the iPhone, because Kevin Rose recently stirred up the internet with a little video that he made, as he does frequently. This time he had a version of Quick, our favorite video streaming software, on his iPhone, but his iPhone was not jailbroken. And so I had heard about this, obviously, because Daniel works for Quick, and so that's why
yes.
we have him on. And he was telling me about that they decided to, you know, not require all their beta testers to jailbreak their iPhones, and so now they're doing the ad hoc thing. So everybody, when they saw this, they thought, well, if you don't require a jailbreak and you're just doing it through ad hoc, that must mean that it's coming soon to the App Store. It'll just because, you know, it's already there without a jailbreak. And, you know, after talking with Daniel and, you know, thinking about this and trying to, you know, work out how they're doing this, basically it comes down to, yeah, the ad hoc thing is kind of taking Apple out of the loop. Whenever you develop an application, you don't need to send it off to them to have them take a look at it and see if it's okay or not. This is all privately done by the developer. So it does not mean that Quick is coming to the iPhone right now. Basically, the way it's going to stay is until Apple changes their SDK agreement, applications are not supposed to be taking images directly from the camera. In spite of that, there are a whole bunch of changes in the Quick application since we last saw it. The jailbreak incarnation of it, the one that I've been playing with. So, Daniel, would you like to talk about some of the changes in the Quick application and maybe some plans or anything like that?
And then when sure, the rest so of us just, get on the beta list.
We would all like to be on the beta list.
Peer pressure. Just a quick disclosure, like Mike said, I do work for Quick. I am Quick's evangelist and I do product marketing. I've been with Quick since February of 2008, so I've been there a while and I've seen the whole Quick experience evolve. But basically what happened is the last time you guys saw the Quick application, it was completely, it was like five levels before alpha.
It was buggy.
Yeah. It was very buggy, and the current version with AdHoc is very stable. I'm using it on my phone, and I've been using it for weeks now, and it hasn't crashed once. And what's cool in this version is that you can tell location. You can tell Quick that you want people on Quick.com to see that you're either at a precise location at like 867 something address, Silicon Valley, yada yada. You can also say street level, you can say city level, and you can also say that you never want your address or your location to be shown.
So it'll pop you down on a map, right?
Exactly. So
that'll be right beside the stream as you watch it, right?
Exactly. So what happens is on the quick.com interface, so if you want to go ahead and check out my profile, it's quick.com/DanielBRU. You can see that if you click on a video, you can see there are three there are four tabs. There's info, live chat, comments, and then a map. And in that map, I usually say country. So that's why it always says United States for mine. And then for the live chat, what's cool is that our awesome interactive interface, what happens is you live chat on the web, that also shows up on the iPhone. So a lot of things have changed. It is a tremendous better quality since it is 3G, and it's still great quality over Wi-Fi, and that's usually what I stream from, but the quality is much, much better. The audio is tremendously better. It's even better than Nokia phones, which were basically known for having the best video quality from Nokia N95s, which has a 5-megapixel camera.
It's really interesting, I thought, with the iPhone, because the microphone is actually kind of pointing down toward the ground. I was pretty intrigued by the fact that it picks up audio very, very well without even having to, you know, use your hand to directionalize the microphone or anything. It works very well with the Quick. The interface on this new one, as far as I've seen from the video, is much, much improved. The other one was just kind of, it felt like it was kind of thrown together and, you know, it just in an attempt to get it out the door to start the testing of the background technology. But now it looks much better. The chat interface is integrated with the application in a much more elegant way. And all the controls and the settings and all that are so much better too. Now, is there a way to, if you don't have Quick, let's say, is there a way to get to the Quick site and do a register or a login or anything like that from the application without leaving it?
So you have Quick jailbroken or unjailbroken?
Well, either way, let's just say when the app is out, you go and you, I mean, with this current version, can you just hit a button and say, I want to log in, or I want to jump into Quick and check something out or change a setting or something? Is there a way to get in there right now, or is that a planned feature?
So one of the things that if you actually go into the Quick application, and I'm looking at my phone right now and try to explain this at the best of my abilities, but at the very bottom left, there's a Quick logo, which brings up our settings. And then there's in the general section, there's a sign off button. And in that sign off button, you hit sign off and it basically says, okay, you're signed off. Now, if you open up the Quick application again, it notices that you're not signed in and it asks you to register now. And from there, you can register from your phone. We have an awesome WAP interface.
Gotcha.
And you can register Quick from your iPhone.
And that makes sense because you already support phones that have, you know, WAP browsers and stuff like that. So that makes sense.
Exactly. And you can edit your profile from the phone. You can edit resolution. You currently can do 320 by 240 and 176 by 144, which is tiny. And you can also do optimization. You can either do max quality or minimum delay. So usually when I'm on a 3G level, I'm usually going to be on minimum delay because I want, you know, my message to be heard fast and quick. But when I'm at home, get it quick. When I'm at home, I'm usually on max quality. But you can also share your stream details, and it's just a much needed improvement on both sides.
And you can also set it up so it'll send out a Twitter whenever you start streaming. Can you send out ad hoc Twitters, just like hit a button so you can, you know, spam your Twitter friends and hit it five times or something?
Well, what happens is if you hit the top of the screen, you get a nice interface with six options. You can mute and unmute audio. You can turn chat on and off. You can make your videos public and private. You can share your video. Like, let's say you want to email a video like, okay, Mike, I just did a video from Cupertino. I want to share it. So I'm going to hit the share video button. You can edit the video details, like the video title, description. You can tag videos from the phone. And also you can send out a stream alert, which sends out to Twitter or whatever social networks you have set up, including Pounce and stuff like that.
So now,
send it out 20 times, exactly like you described. It's a feature, Mike.
It is.
Yeah. Well, I actually set up a separate account on Twitter for exclusively for sending out when I'm streaming on Quick. It's I think it's Michael on Quick. I'm pretty sure. Let me check it. Twitter.com.
Yep, it is.
Michael
on Quick.
On Quick. Yeah, QIK. So Michael on Quick, you can follow that if you want to see whenever I'm streaming. Usually it's me talking to the internet and driving around in my car. I have this cool little mount thing that I put in my windshield so you can see where I'm driving. It's very entertaining if you have a boring life like me. I want to know, when I was using it, the jailbreak version a little while ago, that had some of these features that you're talking about, but it wasn't as polished and didn't work as well, at New Media Expo, the stream really cut out quite a bit. It would stop and start and do the buffering thing. Is it more reliable now?
Oh yes, it is much more reliable. Like you said, it's not like we just, you know, said, okay, let's put it all together, and we put it together. We took a long time getting this version to our standards. We have some of the best mobile developers working on this, and we have some of the best iPhone developers working on this, and they really put a lot of time and effort into this. And as you can probably see, the effort shows. And it all depends on your network connection. At New Media Expo, that was when? August?
Yeah, that was so August. It was Vegas, and the phones were freaking out, as you guys probably have noticed. The other guys who were there.
Yeah, imagine thousands of phones in one location all trying to get to one satellite. It kind of just clutters. And then you have a phone that's trying to stream live video, which is ridiculously bandwidth intensive, especially from a phone like the iPhone.
Yeah, and it's not going to work at Macworld. So all you guys who think that you're going to get the Quick and put it on your iPhone and stream it at Macworld, it's not going to work at all. I think, Daniel, didn't you try doing that and it cut out at some point during the keynote? Or,
well, the thing is, Apple puts you in Moscone West, which actually out of the both buildings has the worst reception. And I think they did it on purpose, but that's just me. But they put it in the room with the worst reception. There's no Wi-Fi, no power outlets. And so it's like I was carrying three N95 batteries around with me, two Nokia phones linked to the same account. I was a true hardcore Quicker at Macworld, and I only got like 2 minutes of good footage.
Yeah, the cell phone signals get totally jammed up there. Even if you do have signal, it doesn't work well at the conference throughout the day. You'll get text messages and voicemail and all that, you know, 20 minutes later than it comes in. Now, what about
like being in my apartment?
What about the jailbreak version right now? Because do you guys still support or have a beta version on for the jailbreak community on the Cydia?
Yes. So you have two options to getting Quick on jailbroken iPhones. You can either use Installer for Beta, which I don't know if you guys on the podcast talked about it recently, or you can use Cydia. And if you head over, and Mike, I'll give you a direct link to this, but we wrote a blog post with complete instructions for both installer for beta and instructions for Cydia, and I'll send that over to you, Mike, so you can put that in the show notes.
Cool. Yeah. And so now, is that version caught up with the current version?
Yes.
So it has all the same improvements. It's got the same interface and all that. It's just if you have a jailbroken phone, that's the way that you'll be able to do that.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Hey, Mike?
Yeah.
Can we talk about the kind of bigger issue? I mean, this is awesome that there is this app available for non-jailbroken iPhones. And, you know, I've been dying. I've always said Quick might be the one app that gets me to actually jailbreak my iPhone because I'm just getting so frustrated with this. And the thing I'm getting frustrated with, and maybe Daniel, I don't know how much you can talk about it or not because of, you know, Apple NDAs and things like that. But the bigger issue of Apple not allowing video on a device and from a camera that is obviously capable of doing video. I mean, Quick isn't the only developer who wants to do video stuff with the iPhone. And there's a ton of developers I know who are out there working on video apps that are just kind of sitting waiting for Apple to kind of open things up. And I'm kind of curious, you know, so I understand maybe with something like Quick, they might be concerned about the 3G network and their partnerships with AT&T and the other carriers and things like that. But I'm kind of curious what people on the panel think the issue is beyond just, you know, what if I just want to record and capture video right to my iPhone, or have video in my game application to somehow enhance the experience, or, you know, those sorts of things that we haven't seen yet. If anybody, you know, what are people's opinions on why is Apple so locked down on you know, locking the camera so that it doesn't do these video type applications?
I can tell you my opinion based on my opinion, which has nothing to do with Quick. But for Quick, you know, we are looking into getting Quick on the App Store, and it's something personally I want to see happen. But here is my conspiracy. Apple wants to control video too. They want to come out with an app that will beat all of these apps, that will let you record video, stream video. They have something cooking. I think they have something cooking. No one knows about it. And they are going to try to take over the video space also on the iPhone. They're controlling everything almost. They're controlling the main parts. They're controlling email. They're controlling phone. They're controlling music. The next thing sort of controlling audio, and now they're going to control video. So that's my personal conspiracy, which has nothing to do with Quick. But at Quick, we really want to see Quick on the App Store.
Okay, so I'll chime in with what I think, and I've definitely expressed this before, but my opinion is that Apple does understand that we all want to see video applications come to the iPhone. I think that it's just simply a problem with getting all the kinks worked out with the current set of APIs that developers have access to. The iPhone is still crashy. It's still buggy. It does things that we don't expect it to do, and it every now and then you need to restart it. And so it's not as reliable as it once was, even still with the 2.1 update. It's much better. But I think that a lot of what's been holding them back with as far as the SDK and what developers can do is just that they want to get everything stabilized before they start adding you know, more things on top of the pile. They don't want it to, you know, they don't want it to collapse and fall over and just get so buggy. Again, the same thing with I think Flash. If they do ever have plans to get Flash on the iPhone, I think they're going to be waiting for a while until it gets really solid to keep adding things to it.
Interesting. Bill or Jeff?
All right. Here's my...
Go ahead.
Oh, my turn? Okay. All right. So here's my take on the whole thing. I think that Apple is just doing their usual thing, which is being just totally adamant about controlling every aspect of how their products work. And I can understand that because that's what's made the Mac what it is. It's what has made people fall in love with the iPhone. So I totally get that. But I think that until Apple feels like they totally have this video thing completely wrapped up and working exactly the way they want it to work, they're not going to open that up to anyone.
Yeah, and let's not forget. Sorry to interrupt, but I want to throw in that
that's okay.
You know, right now that you know all the features that they, for the most part, most of the features that they keep away from developers, such as you know making a mail application or maybe a web browser or something like that, is that they already have an application that does that now. Looking at it from a different perspective, all the stuff that developers can do as far as access to their hardware, that Apple has already done that. They haven't given access to developers that they don't already have in their current applications. You know what I'm saying? So it'd be interesting to see an application that can record video or just simply capture or stream video at all from the camera when Apple's current camera application only takes pictures. So it may be that, you know, on top of the fact that they want to get obviously the API going for that to work, they also want to get their camera app more functional. So it's not like we're sitting here looking at, you know, Apple has this ability to record video on the phone, but they're not giving that to developers. It's still just not there. And that may be, I don't know why they're not doing that at this point. Do you guys have any speculation on why Apple doesn't have video recording in the phone right now?
Well, I think
Bill's going to chime in.
I just think that, you know, to pull a line from Apollo 13, there's, you know, that video is like number 1,024 on the priority list, and right now they're like on number 8 with the iPhone.
Yeah.
Because like you said, they do have so much to go. And I think one thing, and I mean, if I had a vote, I'd say put Quick out there now. I'd love to go to iTunes and buy it and pay for it and do the whole thing. That would be my vote. But I think what Apple wants to do is when they do run the commercials, whether it's a third-gen iPhone or it's an app of their own, they want to be able to come out and say, iPhone, now with video. And in this 2009, 2010, they want it to sound new to everybody. That's like when they came out and said, now we have third-party apps on the iPhone. To most people, to 99% of people who weren't doing the jailbreaking and never heard of it, it sounded new. But if Quick's out there and we're all using it and it's a mainstream app and you buy it on iTunes, and then they come out in 2009 and they say, iPhone, now with video, well, it doesn't sound new. What's going to motivate us to go buy the new iPhone? So it may just be from a marketing standpoint that they don't want too many people using it yet. But like I said, my vote would be let us have it.
Well, it's interesting, and the only we're not the only people who think that the iPhone is lacking in features. Recently, I think it was this week, maybe a few weeks ago, but someone from Intel, working on their Atom processor department, they said that the thing that's really holding the iPhone back is that they're using these crummy ARM processors in the iPhone, and of course, the next day they came back out with someone who was at a higher pay grade said, you know, we didn't mean that. We want to be nice, and we don't want to say anything mean to Apple. And they issued a correction on the comments, saying that the general manager of the group responsible for Intel's Ultra Mobility products acknowledged that Intel's low power Atom processor does not yet match the battery life characteristics of the ARM processor in a phone form factor. Although it is very cool, the idea of having an x86 processor in a phone that small would be fantastic. And I don't know, obviously battery life is a huge, huge problem with the iPhone. We're all complaining about that. Everyone agrees that the iPhone could use some better battery life. But Adam, would it be easier or more beneficial to developers, at least, to have an x86 platform to work on? Or is that something that developers don't even really pay attention to with all the APIs and stuff going on in Xcode? Is that something they code for as the processor, or do they let the compiler take care of that?
I have no idea.
Well, when you do some programming.
App-level programming things, and I'm mostly a web developer, so
okay.
I wouldn't be able to get into that technical nitty-gritty, but I have to say, you know, I would prefer they switch to the Atom processor just for obvious reasons, but no. Exactly. You got it. No, but you know, it's funny because basically when I read this, it was like, okay, so our, you know, kind of engineering technical guys actually said what we really think, but you know, top level executive comes back and says, "Oh, Apple, you buy a lot of our stuff." So,
yeah.
I mean that's the synopsis of what's going on. And obviously the second statement that came out is the more, you know, the reason why. I'm sure Apple would perfectly you know, we've already seen they're going to go with the best technology that's out there for running their stuff. So if, you know, the Intel can give them a chip that is better powered and meets the power requirements that they have, you know, in terms of more processing power, but still meets the power requirements they have for the iPhone and, you know, probably the heat requirements and all the other things, then by all means, Apple would probably jump at it. I mean, they already have a good relationship with Intel at this point. So why wouldn't they? But right now the ARM is probably the best mobile processor that they feel they can put in the iPhone.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's like 90% of all smartphones are using.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and Apple has a history with ARM. I mean, the Newtons were powered by ARM processors, so it's a technology they're familiar with as well. So, you know, there's that comfort level that always plays into it. You know, but obviously OS X, you know, is the base operating system for the iPhone. It runs on Intel, so I wouldn't think there'd be not technical challenges there, but. The first statement was very funny when I first read it, because I'm thinking, I've seen 3D games running. We've already talked about video running on the iPhone. I mean, I haven't seen an application out there that makes it look like it's floundering in any way. It seems to meet the requirements for most people. So, you know, I think Apple also has to look at that at the end of the day, and they have to weigh the benefits and things against that. It's like, it's doing all this stuff. It's doing 3D with the OpenGL light, or what, I forget what the light version of OpenGL is.
OpenGL,
yes. It can do video. Yeah. It's doing all these things, and it's doing it very well, and it's getting decent battery life. I don't think it's getting phenomenal battery life or anything, but it gets, I mean, you know, my first gen gets great battery life. I can't speak to the 3Gs. So
yeah, well, what, you know, as soon as you start playing like X Plane or something like that, your battery life is down the crapper. But you know, for the most part, if you're not using a whole
but
bunch
it's,
of
it's a balance game, and you don't need the processor sucking up extra cycles to give you a few more frame, you know, a couple extra frame rates,
right?
So, you know, I think they play a balance game, and Apple will always pick the best technology for the best application,
yeah,
where they can.
And we've already seen that, you know, happen with the new MacBook Pros. I don't know about the MacBooks too. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they went with an NVIDIA chipset now for the they switched over from an Intel chipset to an NVIDIA chipset for running their new notebooks, and that was because they NVIDIA has the ability to do this hybrid you know, GPU thing that they have going on. So you can, with the MacBook Pros at least, you can switch between the two, you know, graphics chips, and, you know, one is better for power and one is better for graphics. And so it you know, obviously Apple, it, you know, they have some loyalties, but they'll certainly go after whatever the best technology is, you know, to provide that extra level for the consumers, as far as, you know, either battery life or performance or both, which we've seen. So I think that, you know, at some point they will possibly switch over to the Intel, because it makes a lot of sense, because they're already using x86 in for OS 10. Obviously, iPhone OS X is a little different than the desktop version, but I'm sure it'll provide more features and you know, a little bit of convenience to their engineers down the line when that becomes a possibility. But right now, I think the concern is more battery life than, you know, being able to run you know, Quake 4 on your iPhone. So let's move on to tethering, because that's always an interesting topic. AT&T, I think that, well, actually someone sent a letter to Steve Jobs a little while ago asking when we would see a tethering plan for the iPhone.
How do you do that?
What?
How do you send a letter to Steve Jobs?
I think it's steve@apple.com, isn't it?
And, yeah,
steve@apple.com. And get a response from Steve?
People have been getting lots of responses lately. It's been, I don't know if it's been an increase in his responses to those, or if it's been that people have been publishing them more. But yeah, people have.
He has like 8 assistants to reply to all of his emails.
Yeah, and I'm sure he has like mail rules set up too to, you know, send out, you know, stock replies to a lot of stuff. But yeah, so he sent out a reply saying that they were working on it, and this is a little while ago. According to Mac blogs, they have information from a reliable source inside AT&T confirming that they have been working on a tethering plan for the iPhone. But it's been actually delayed because they have a severe lack in their 3G network. And it says, in fact, some...
Gee, what a shock.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, yes. Yeah, the 3G network is not that... I mean, aside from coverage, it's not... You know, we saw this definitely in Las Vegas, which you would think it's, you know, hello, it's Las Vegas. There's always going to be a bunch of people there using their phones to do whatever. You'd think that they would kind of have it set up where you're not bouncing back and forth between 3G and Edge and having problems with your you know, battery life going down because your phone isn't sure what's going on with the network. But yeah, so at least this is confirmation from AT&T that they're you know, working on a tethering plan. I certainly use NetShare every now and then. Unfortunately, it doesn't work for everything like FTP. And let me see what it says here. You guys can talk about this.
I was just going to say, I have tethering already, and I don't have to pay for it. It cost me $10.
Are you using NetShare?
Exactly.
What are you using? Oh, see, I have NetShare too.
Exactly. Yeah, I picked it up.
Yeah, I picked it up too, but I do not understand how to set it up, so I'll talk to you after, Adam.
I can tell you exactly how to do it, or Adam can.
Yeah, it's a little tricky. It's a little tricky. I mean, it's kind of backwards. I really only ever use it in a pinch. Like, I was at a user group meeting, and for some reason the Wi-Fi had went down, and I was the only one able to get an outbound connection. And, you know, again, I have a first gen phone, so it's Edge, and it's, you know, really slow. But
hey, it works.
It's good enough, like checking your email, and yeah, it works in a pinch. It's not something that you're gonna do all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure whatever AT&T would come out with would be simple and integrated with the iPhone. So
yeah, hopefully something that would actually make a lot of sense to people who don't, you know, want to go in and create a separate location and an ad hoc network and all that goofy stuff. Yeah, I've been saying this for a long time that I think it would probably just work over like a USB connection from the iPhone, because that'd be the simplest way to do it. But I was looking more at this, and it says, in fact, the source says from AT&T's network, it can barely handle the strain from normal iPhone browsing. And a quote from the source, since I've worked here, I've never seen them so worried about legalities. And he goes on to say, regardless of how many billions of dollars AT&T pours into their 3G network, it hasn't been stable enough to handle all you iPhone users. So AT&T is a little bit bitter that we're just surfing away on our iPhones.
Poor AT&T, we've given them all this business, poor them. But I mean, if you think about them, just if you look at these sales numbers, the millions of people who are buying an iPhone every second, I guess, it's got to be such a constant battle for them to keep up with that. Plus, you see surveys that show that people are more likely to surf the web if they have an iPhone than phone XYZ. It's got to be, far be it for me to defend AT&T, but it's going to be a monumental task just to keep up, just keep from getting further and further behind each other. I don't know if they're out there laying more cables or what they do with it to make the network bigger, but it's got to be a constant battle that's getting worse and worse as the sales curve of the iPhone keeps getting steeper and keeps getting more and more people on there. So, I kind of look at it maybe just because I don't use it myself. I selfishly think it's a good thing that they don't do that because, don't slow it down for the rest of us. But that's just me.
Well, you know, also, if you look at like a network like Sprint, their EVDO network is far more advanced than the current AT&T 3G network. If you, I did my live stream using a Sprint EVDO card last year, and that, you know, that works just fine for streaming stuff up to Ustream. But I, you know, just for the sake of trying it out, I, you know, opened up NetShare and gave it a try to try and do some stuff from Ustream to see if that would work. And it is very slow. I mean, it's so slow compared to Sprint's current network. And so you can, I mean, it's pretty obvious that AT&T's 3G network is in its infancy still. And, you know, that's been obvious just by looking at how much coverage it actually has. And I've been very happy that, you know, my area, because mostly because it's so close to Chicago, that it's slowly been growing. But for a lot of the people who are in other parts of the country who don't have 3G, it's got to be frustrating for them to see that, you know, they're paying, you know, an extra $10 a month for this 3G service that they just don't have access to right now. So there you have it. And Bill,
isn't their responsibility to move, though?
Yeah, they do actually have an obligation. That's in the contract.
Pack up the cats and move. You know, I just say this. I was really surprised when the new MacBooks came out and they didn't have 3G, because that's such an obvious thing to me to make a laptop sort of useful in the iPhone generations to have a 3G chip like in the MacBook. Maybe this tells me why, because AT&T was like, nah, let's not do that yet. We can't even handle the phones.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Apple didn't even consider asking AT&T about that with looking at, you know, how poor the coverage is and the performance of it and everything. I'm sure they have a special set of towers and, you know, extra processing power, horsepower behind all the towers down in Cupertino and out in Palo Alto by Steve's house, so he doesn't actually know how bad it really is. But
okay, now that's a smart business move.
they're pouring half of their income into making sure that the guys at Apple don't realize how bad it is, instead of actually improving.
Yeah. There is my dad at work. They gave him a Windows Mobile Blackjack too, and he hates that phone, by the way. But there is something called Walking Hotspot, which basically turns your Windows Mobile or 3G Wi-Fi enabled phone into a hotspot and enables multiple clients like laptops and MP3 players to connect to the internet anywhere where there's mobile network coverage. So it works with Symbian S60 phones and Windows Mobile phones, and it's at walkinghotspot.com.
Now, is the idea for that supposed to be to create a giant net of phones where you can just kind of get a hotspot, or is it more of the approach of kind of like a net share for your personal use?
Basically, it turns your phone into a hotspot, basically. And right. When I had an N95, I don't use an N95 anymore. I honestly cannot remember the name of the application, but what it did is it tethered my N95's 3G connection to my Mac using this application. And it basically, I created my own Wi-Fi network. I password protected it. And it was just... it worked awesome because I take Caltrain weekly. So, you know, spending that 40 minutes to get to San Francisco, you know, I rather do something productive than just look out the window and see the same stuff every week.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I do when I take the train into Chicago. So yeah, it's a great, great thing to have. So let's talk about the Apple's Q4 conference call. It was a whole bunch of boring, you know, technical talk about how they're doing accounting. It was actually kind of interesting if you paid close attention to what they're doing as far as the subscription service for the iPhone, or subscription accounting, how they account for the iPhone, and you know how they're actually accounting for revenues and all that, and how they're changing the way that works. But I'm not an expert, so I won't get into that because I'll sound like an idiot. But I will mention that Apple has finally, as we suspected, sold 10 million iPhones, actually more than 10 million iPhones. They sold, since the July 11th launch of the iPhone 3G, they sold 6.9 million iPhones in the fourth quarter, which actually exceeded the sales of the original iPhone throughout its entire lifetime, which was 6.1. So that's just amazing. You can definitely see from that, you know, at least either the price drop, I think it was a combination between the price drop and the 3G, and very possibly the App Store as well, really driving sales for the iPhone 3G now. And I think that Steve actually mentioned that the App Store, from what they've seen in their numbers, it is actually now a driving force in people purchasing the iPhone. So they see the App Store, they see what you can do. And obviously they've been advertising this, that you can go and just grab an application and start, you know, doing whatever. That is starting to drive sales for the iPhone. I think there have been 200 million applications sold, and it was only in 102 days that they sold 200 million applications. The rate of new applications is increasing each week. And so what do you guys think? Fantastic for Apple. I think if it wasn't deferred their accounting right now, the iPhone would have represented $4.6 billion of revenue, or 39% of all their income for that quarter, which is just phenomenal. So what do you think, guys, about the App Store? Yeah. What do you think? Are people drawn to the iPhone because of the App Store, or because of the 3G, or because of the price drop? What do you think about these numbers?
You know, Michael, I think there's something that you didn't mention in there that I'm seeing, at least in the people that I ask about who have, you know, recently bought a 3G iPhone and held off, and that's in the business world, the enterprise features, believe it or not. You know, in my... in my circle, exchange support and VPN are kind of two really big ones. Exchange support, when you can get, you know, the buy-off from your IT department. But what I'm seeing is that it's the effect, and I think we might have talked about this. I know I've talked about it on the MacCast before, this sort of top-down effect that happens when a product like the MacBook Air or the iPhone, you know, gets in the eyes of the CEO and the CEO wants it. And when Apple comes out and says, we now support Exchange, and it might not be supported in the way the IT department would like it supported. But if the CEO sees that in the marketing and decides, you know what, I want an iPhone and you're going to make our Exchange server work with it. Well, guess what happens? So, you know, I'm seeing a lot of that going on where people have finally picked up the iPhone because they can VPN with it, because they can do Exchange. And I know at my office, they haven't enabled our Exchange server and probably never will for the kind of direct access. But we do have VPN in place. So I can actually do a VPN connection with my iPhone and just leave that up and running and get all of my Exchange email, my, you know, direct access to Exchange through the VPN. And it works very well. It actually switches very well between even Edge and Wi-Fi and stuff like that, and usually maintains the connection, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, obviously people in, you know, enterprise and businesses and all that are looking at the iPhone as an actual option. Also, Congress is now looking at the iPhone as a new possible alternative official phone for House members to use, which is very cool to, you know, to think that the you know, our government's going to start using the iPhone, so they're all going to, you know, enjoy that, I suppose.
I read that story, and what I find very surprising, and I think a lot of Americans should find this surprising, is it's my understanding that BlackBerry, all of the email runs through a server or servers up in Canada.
Yep, yep.
Right. Now, does anybody find it disturbing that our congressman's emails are all flowing through Canada? I mean, I know it's all encrypted and everything, but it just seems weird that the U.S. government would even allow that.
It's just,
period.
It's just
like, we're going to send all.
It's just Canada.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true. It's
like
just Canada.
Canada anytime soon?
Canada even have an army? Canada's like our attic, or, you know, that extra room in your house that you know it's there and you can put stuff in it and you don't have to worry about it. Really, right?
That's a really good way to look at it. You know, I think that Steve Jobs even mentioned during the keynote, the presentation of the SDK, mentioned, you know, hey, you know, BlackBerry, all your stuff goes through Canada, and, you know, with ours, it goes directly through your server. There's no middleman. So they were even promoting that at that point, but they never actually mentioned.
I mean, that's obviously all marketing hype, and I say it kind of tongue-in-cheek. But, I mean, very seriously, from a national security perspective, you'd think the government would have kind of some issue from that. I know we have good relations with very good relations with Canada, but, you know, it had to be something that, you know, somebody kind of considered at some point. It's like,
Yeah.
No, but I know BlackBerry as a company, it's all encrypted, and I don't want to get emails from anybody. I understand the security measures and things that are in place. But
it is an interesting observation for sure. So it'll be interesting to see if they get, I'm sure a lot of members would love to use the iPhone. Not only is it, you know, exciting for people who are in the know technologically, but also for people who don't want to have to, you know, worry about the hassles of, you know, how does this phone work? So I guess, you know, aging those members.
Doesn't the Army or Navy or one of those, weren't one of those guys?
Yeah, I think
the beta testers for the version 2 software, I think they were in the video.
Yeah, they were in the video. I don't remember if it was the Army or the Navy, but yeah, they were also in there too, which is very cool.
This has got to be kind of scary for RIM, because they've had a lock-in on that whole U.S.
Yep.
Congress thing. And to have the upstart Apple come in and say, look, you know, this is an option too. Well, that's got to be really a big concern for RIM.
Well, you got to look at what RIM's numbers were for last quarter. And I was actually just going to bring that up. Apple, like I said, sold 6.9 million iPhones in the last quarter. RIM sold 6.1. So Apple beat RIM this last quarter in selling of the units. And, you know, obviously there's no guarantee that Apple will continue selling more than RIM, because this was, you know, their introductory quarter for that phone. But it is a substantial, you know, mark to get to. You know, this is fantastic. You would never think that Apple, you know, just being, you know, Apple, hey, we're gonna get in the into the phone market. We're gonna, you know, produce a phone. Nobody thought that they would do this well this quickly. And I think that they actually said, measured by revenue, they are the third largest mobile phone supplier in the world. And that's after Nokia and Samsung.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, that was it. I was just thinking that's really wild that they can produce those kinds of numbers.
It's amazing, and you have to give Apple a lot of credit. Now, I have to say, doesn't the BlackBerry Bold come out now? And I have a feeling we'll have to hold off and see what they do with the Bold numbers, but they'll probably blow Apple's number away. You know, a lot of people still just like the BlackBerry.
Yeah.
I hate the BlackBerry. I cannot. The keys are just so small. But then again, the Apple.
Go ahead.
I don't think Apple is competing with any of these companies. Obviously, they are in a business sense, but I don't think you convincing. I mean, yeah, a lot of people are switching from a BlackBerry to an iPhone. A lot of BlackBerry users refuse to switch, but the BlackBerry Research Motion can only sell to that small segment of the population who wants a super, super powerful, you know, like a I don't know what you call it, an alpha phone or something. The iPhone may be a smartphone, but it sells to everybody. All Apple has to do to sell an iPhone is convince an iPod user to upgrade to the latest iPod and switch to AT&T if they're not already on it. That's it. And so the BlackBerry folks are continuing to sell into a very small market while the iPhone is selling into potentially everyone who's ever owned an iPod and everyone who's ever owned a cell phone. I think within a couple of quarters, iPhone will have 5, 10, 20 times the number of BlackBerry sales. Not that BlackBerry will go down. It may go up because more and more people are going to embrace smartphones. But I don't see any reason why the iPhone sales numbers can't. I mean, it sounds crazy, but I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of 2009, the iPhone has 20% of the U.S. Cell phone market. Why not? They're just converting a bunch of iPod users and getting them to give up their crappy Razor cell phone they never liked anyway.
So do you think that they're going to sustain these sales numbers through the next quarter? Or, I mean, obviously Christmas is coming up and, you know, I don't know how big of a deal cell phones are for Christmas because, you know, obviously it's a product, but there's also, a contract attached to that sort of thing. And it's not as cool as it would be last year where you can just, you know, buy an iPhone, throw it in a box and put it under the tree and you don't have to worry about, you know, getting a contract or anything. But do you think we're going to see sustained sales numbers for the iPhone, or do you think they're going to kind of drop off because we've gotten through a majority of the people who are initially buying the iPhone 3G?
From my teenage perspective, and my parents definitely agree, is Apple has, out of companies that produce laptops, phones, music players, anything, they have the best marketing towards kids by having these little like field trips and these camps, you know, having all of that. And then when you're done with these camps, these kids go up and say, mom, I want an iPod, I want an iPhone, I want a MacBook. It's genius marketing, and Apple is the only one who can pull anything like this off.
So you think that the
I'm
parents
a victim.
Are actually you're a victim. That's a nice way to look at it. Do you think that a lot of parents are going to go and buy iPhones for their kids this
Christmas? I would say not, but they might actually, you know, maybe they're college-bound kids, which could be a whole factor in this. And I think there was a recent study that came out, and I can't remember the numbers, but showing exactly what Daniel's describing, that a lot of high school users and early college or college users have a huge tendency towards the iPhone and iPods and things like that as devices. So Apple's doing obviously very well, whether it's a result of marketing or just the hip factor of the brand. I don't know. I have a feeling part of it is just Apple is just perceived as this kind of cool, still kind of renegade company. That appeals to the more independent, more creative type person, against, say, big corporate Microsoft or something like that. So
yeah,
I think there's some of that factoring.
Yeah, from what I'm seeing, as far as my friends go, a lot of my friends who are in college and all that, they're definitely attracted to the Apple brand and everything that Apple has to offer. Obviously, you know, Apple has a lot of great stuff going for it as far as, you know, ease of use and really friendly media and all that stuff, but it's also a very hip brand. So yeah, I can definitely see that for college kids. And I have a friend who's who just broke his I think it was an LG Shine, and his mother is now contemplating just getting him an iPhone because she might as well. And it's at $200, it's something that parents will consider, I think.
And I convinced my mom to get one, and she still doesn't even know how to use it.
She will at some point. This happened with my mother. She was just sitting there. She just did not know how to use it, and all of a sudden, one night, she was just kind of, you know, fooling around with it, and she just kind of said, "I understand this now." And just at that point, she just totally loved it and kept, you know, doesn't stop with her going on about how great the iPhone is and all the stuff that she can do, although the service in our house is really poor. So I did want to mention this one last thing. An email came in regarding this. We were talking about the 2.1 or 2.2 features last week, and we missed this one. We didn't see this before, but apparently 2.1, this latest update, came with the ability to, if a web application is properly set up, so you'd have to actually, I think it's add some sort of attribute to your page, Apple has added the ability to let web applications run in a full screen private instance of WebKit on the iPhone, so it looks and runs just like a normal application. So the way it works is you load up your mobile application that's, you know, like i.brightkite.com, for example, and I don't think it'll work with Brightkite right now because they haven't added this attribute to it. But just as an example, you hit the plus button, add it to your home screen, and then when you relaunch it from the home screen, it'll actually come up without any of the Safari controls, so it won't have a back and forward, it won't have the bookmarks or the tab button at all. So it'll look like an application, but it'll be running off of the web. So this is a very cool thing that we missed, and I didn't hear a whole lot about it until I got this email. So we hadn't even heard about this or mentioned it on on iPhoneLA.com. Is this a big deal? Or I mean, obviously, web applications are kind of going out of style at this point. Adam, I know you still use Holo, right?
Yep, absolutely love it. And this is the programming area I can talk about. This is actually a meta tag for those people who know what that is. A simple meta tag called viewport that you can add in, and then define a bunch of attributes that can control how this runs in mobile Safari. So if anybody wants to look up, you know, just search Meta Viewport on Google, and you can kind of get some of the details in terms of the app development and the things that you could do with this. But, you know, it's interesting that they would even allow this, because it kind of takes away, you know, adds a layer of transparency to an app that's running. Suddenly you have an app that's running in a web browser that could look exactly like a native app that might be running. So it's good in some ways. I have to wonder if it isn't a little bit dangerous in others, because you don't have that kind of Safari frame around it to define, hey, I'm in a web app now versus a standalone app. And I could see people getting confused. You create a home link button, and you know you have the ability to on your page also define what that icon looks like if someone, you know, bookmarks that as an app they add to their home screen. So it, you know, you could be almost fully functioning like a native app, which is very cool. So I love Holo. I love web apps. And even with Edge, I find a lot of them run very well. If they're optimized well enough, they can function in a lot of ways like full blown apps. So I was kind of excited to see this little story in the show notes, because I wasn't aware of it either, but it looks like a cool new feature and something I'll probably play around with.
Yeah. So I hate to go back to the BlackBerry story, but I had to hold this in the whole time you guys were talking. Quick, actually, just a couple of minutes ago, announced we have a Quick client for BlackBerry. So you can head over to quick.com/blog, and you can find all the instructions on how to get Quick on the BlackBerry. And we are supporting the BlackBerry Pearl, the Curve, the Bold, and the Pearl Flip.
Very cool. So you're just you guys are just adding more and more phones to your repertoire all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right.
So you guys went iPhone before BlackBerry on your support?
I guess
it's obvious now, but it's just interesting to me that you, even though you didn't have the official support from Apple and couldn't get in the store, you guys still went to the iPhone before you went to the BlackBerry. To me, the BlackBerry is, it'll always be around as that sort of high-end professional option, but to me it seems like the way of the dodo. It's a bygone era, because the iPhone is just now the BlackBerry for everybody. So I heard that, and it just kind of sort of furthered my own argument in my head.
All right. I think it is time for our iPhone picks for this week. Let's start with Jeff. What do you have for us?
I have an application I came across a couple days ago that's actually really cool. It's called Handshake. And so, all right, so if you remember the old days when everyone carried a palm around and you'd say, hey, let me beam you this card, and you would. We don't have that with the iPhone, but Handshake adds that feature back in. So you can send someone in your proximity your personal card or another card from your address book, as long as the other person has Handshake also. And it works over Edge, works over 3G, it works over Wi-Fi. When it first came out, it would not run on my iPhone. And so I got all pissed off thinking, well, that's stupid, you know, it doesn't work. Well, it turns out that apparently there's a percentage of the iPhone market that has quite literally an ass load of contacts on their phone. And I'm one of those people. And they hadn't anticipated that. So they fixed it. And now people like me that go around with a bucket load probably like three bucket loads of names stored in their iPhone, it works. So it's Handshake, it's free, and it lets you beam cards back and forth.
Cool. All right. Bill, what do you have for us this week?
Well, this was announced a while ago, but it finally came out. Snow Patrol has a new album coming out this week. That's not my pick. I've heard it, and it's really good. Just, this is not a plug. They're not on the cover of my magazine. I tried, but anyway, they've said for a while they're going to have this interactive iPhone app with the album, and it just came out yesterday, just to get it out there before the album did. And it's basically just the lyrics and the, the album art, the stuff you would find in a booklet typically. Mm-hmm. And it's to me, finally, I look at it as you can finally get the album artwork on the iPhone with you instead of that PDF that comes with an album that you can't really get over to your phone. And it's making the behind the scene, making the album videos in there and stuff. And it's not much, I guess, but it's free, and it's a little 50 megabyte download. I guess there's bigger than the average app, but it's just kind of cool to see. I mean, their album will probably debut at number one or number two here on the charts on Tuesday, so it's cool to see a band that popular do something specific for iPhone users like that. So it's just called Snow Patrol Interactive Booklet in iTunes,
and it's free.
Yeah,
Interactive Booklet. All right, great. Adam, what do you have for us this week?
Well, this was actually a tough week because I found a lot of great stuff this week. But considering we are right before Halloween, I guess I'm going to have to do a Halloween pick.
Fantastic.
And I am going to pick Pumpkin, simply called Pumpkin, by ezone.com. And it's a simple little app. Basically puts a pumpkin face on your screen. You can swipe the eye, nose, and mouth area to switch between different eyes, noses, and mouths, so you can kind of mix it up like those little old books you had when you were a kid, you know, you change the nose and mm-hmm. things like that. And then also when you shake it, it will change the colors of the candlelight coming from the pumpkin and make spooky Halloween noises.
Cool.
So really simple app, kind of goofy, but it's free and fits for Halloween.
Fantastic.
Downloading it right now.
All right. And Daniel, what do you have for us?
Because Jeff stole my app, I
Uh-oh.
Quickly looked through my
sorry, dude.
through my apps. No worries. And I'm just going to read this in my broadcaster voice. If you're an IT professional or a webmaster, FTP on the go is the reason your boss should buy you an iPhone. So it's called FTP on the go, and basically it's FTP on your iPhone. So let's say you're like, I'm at school, and all of a sudden, oh, I made a mistake and some code that I did, I can just FTP into my server from my iPhone, and bada bing, bada boom, I'm there. And it's really easy. It is not free, though. I'm going to check exactly how much it is. You can set a master password on the FTP so it can protect your server login information. You can edit right from the phone, and it's really, really cool. You can view document files. You can Word, Excel, PowerPoint, PDF, and image files are all supported. And as iTunes is opening, I'll tell you exactly the price of FTP on the go. It's FTP on the go.
It's $9.99.
$9.99. Yeah, it's a little expensive, but it's a pretty cool app.
And I can talk about this app because I reviewed this application very recently. I gave it a 3.5 out of 5 simply because it just seemed like it is. It's still a little basic. It felt like it didn't seem like it had as many features as I would like. Just with an FTP app, I would assume I could just download something and store it for later or something. So it doesn't have the ability to do that. But like Daniel said, you can edit files on the fly from wherever you are. So just as I was trying it out, you can actually create a brand new file. You can also create folders. So I made a folder, and then inside of that, I created a new document. And so it'll actually read and allow you to edit anything that's in plain text. But you can also go in there and create a full-blown, .html or CSS or whatever file. So I made a web page on my iPhone and threw it up on my server. So it works really well for that kind of thing. You can also download any image that's on your server and throw that in your camera roll, as well as take a photo and upload that to your server. So right now, I think it's the only FTP application that I found on the App Store. So it's a very good thing to check out, especially if you manage a website. So you'll, at some point, anyone who does manage websites, you have that moment where you say, oh no, I messed that one thing up and I want to go and change it. So this is really good for that sort of application. And like Daniel also said, you can also throw in, it's just got a big list where you can toss all the different logins for your various FTP servers in there, so you can keep track of all those. So it's very cool. And that's FTP on the go. And it's $10. So my pick, I had some trouble picking an application this week, but I finally decided on a really cool application that I just got, and I haven't tried a whole lot, but I know it's very, very cool. It is called Pano from Debacle Software. And this application does a very cool thing. As you can guess from the name, it takes panoramic photos. So you just basically start from the left and go move right. Taking a series of images, it'll actually throw up a little overlay of the last image that you've taken. So you can kind of line it up as you take the next one. And it's got a lot of really cool technology built into it. So it'll do the blending very nice. It produces some very, very nice images. So you can go, I don't know how many photos wide you can go with it. I haven't played with it that much yet. But it's very cool. It's it's $3 in the App Store. You can take panoramic images, and that's it. It's called Pano, so check that out. And so that is all of our picks. I'll remind everyone that iPhoneAlley.com is the place to get more iPhone news, tips, and reviews. We do that throughout the entire week, so iPhoneAlley.com. And if you have any iPhone tips that you'd like to share, something cool that you've discovered and you want everybody else to know about it, you can submit those by clicking on the Contact Us button on the left-hand side of the page. Or if you have an iPhone app or a product that you'd like us to review, you're looking at it and you're not sure, and we can take a look at it for you and review it. You can also use that contact form to send those requests in as well. Also new this week, I finally got around to creating an RSS widget for all you folks on macOS, where you have the dashboard, and you can throw in this widget. It just takes all the RSS from the site and throws it up in there, so you can keep tabs on the site all day and click on a link if you want to check out an article. So you can just find that in the left hand side in the site menu. You can just say get RSS widget, it'll download it, and you can put it in your dashboard. So that's cool. And of course, show notes are at iPhoneAlley.com/podcast, and you can send feedback regarding the podcast to podcast@iPhoneAlley.com. And once again, Mr. Jeff Gamet joins me from the Mac Observer. Thank you so much for being here, Jeff.
Oh, sure. I love doing it. So thanks for having me on.
Yep, that's MacObserver.com. You also do stuff for the iPod Observer at iPodObserver.com. And you can stalk him on Twitter at twitter.com/jgamet.
That's right. And if you'd been stalking me on Saturday, boy, you would have been in for a treat.
Oh, absolutely. You were using the bright kite like crazy. You were taking pictures of the Halloween party you were at, right?
I was. Incredible. It was an absolutely incredible costume party. It was a blast.
Now, I'm going to sound like a total dork. What did you go as?
I went as Captain Hammer.
Captain Hammer.
From Dr. Yeah, that's from Dr. Horrible's sing-along block.
Okay. See, I did actually recognize it. I just didn't know what it was from. So I'm glad it's something from Dr. Horrible and not something that every geek should know, like some other Marvel comic thing that I don't get into. So that was very cool. And so you're using the Brightkite application for that?
I was. And I was okay with the Brightkite app. I'm going to have to talk to those people.
You should give us a review of the Brightkite app right now. You should tell us what you think, because you're the biggest Brightkiter that I follow on Twitter right now.
All right. So here's my impromptu Brightkite application review. It works fine, although it is crashy. And one of the biggest problems I found with it is that if you want to have a very general location as opposed to something very specific, you can't really set that yourself easily. It absolutely requires that the GPS is turned on. And I like to leave that turned off to save power.
Right.
And I like to put a general location where I am, you know, just in case I'm someplace where people really don't want the rest of the world knowing where they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like the party I was at, the people there were totally cool with the photos going out, but they really didn't want the rest of the world knowing their address.
Yeah. And, it doesn't broadcast the address, right? But it will like the intersection. A tip, I don't know if you know this, but you can actually hit that little lock thing up in the corner, and that'll set it to a very general thing. I think it'll say, the city that you're in, basically. And it'll let you post your notes and your photos that way without having your exact location known. So it'll only show up to for trusted friends where you are exactly.
I'll play with that.
Yep.
But having the ability to tell it, just don't pay attention to my GPS, would be really cool, because
yeah.
I had to make sure that I left the GPS turned on all night, which meant that I missed the end of the party as far as photos go, because I killed my battery.
Ah, yeah. I think, can't you turn that off? Is there there's an off for the tracking thing, right? Or does that not kill the GPS? I don't know.
Well, if you turn off the GPS in the system settings, and then you go into the Brightkite application, it tells you have to turn the GPS back on.
Well, there's a little option at the bottom. I think it's I'm trying to get it up as we're talking, but there are two buttons. There's place snapping, and then there's the find me button right below. So it says your location right now, and when it was last updated, and then right below it there are two blue buttons. It says on find me. If you hit that button, it'll say off find me, and then it won't find you. So I guess that'll turn off your GPS location.
Play with that
thingy.
All right, then here's my new biggest complaint about the application.
Okay.
And by the way, I actually really do like it, and I found that it's easy to use, and it uploads photos far, far faster than using the mail link thing that you can set up.
Mm-hmm. And it also does compression for you, and you can like set up the settings for like resolution and all that. So that's really cool.
Right. So it has a lot of great features. So here's my new biggest complaint. Apparently it needs better documentation, because I'm using this application on a regular basis and I just learned three new things.
Yeah, you have to sit around and play with it for a little while, because there are,
you know, I don't have time to play with it. I need it to just work. So it needs better documentation.
Yeah.
But I'm really liking the application.
Cool. And I like it pretty well too. The only thing I have a problem with is that it kind of freaks out with the location every once in a while. It'll say you are on the highway right now, and I'm sitting in my basement or something, or in a friend's basement, and so it doesn't do the find me thing as well. And little tweaks, I'm sure they'll get fixed pretty quickly, because the Brightkite guys definitely have their stuff together, because it's a fantastic application as it is right now.
It is. And even
I have to chime in and say
I really like it.
Adam, you were chiming in?
Trying to chime in. Sorry to step over you, Jeff, once again.
Oh, no,
but I grabbed it as soon as it was out, because I'd been waiting for it, and I've been very happy. And I have to say, on a first gen iPhone, you don't have to worry about those GPS issues. And it's incredible. What I found was it's incredibly accurate. I mean, it drills down, and I was kind of the same way as you, Jeff. I worried a little bit because it would drill down to the intersection level, and that was kind of information I didn't want to share with a lot of people. But what I did find that might be a little good tip for, at least if you have certain areas where you find yourself commonly at that maybe you don't want to share the exact location, is that when you turn off the Find Me feature and you have the Snap feature turned on, if you've set a place mark, it will snap to, it seems like it will snap to that place mark. So
yeah, it does the place mark snapping. That's also another option that's right next to the Find Me.
I do use place marks all the time. So.
Yeah, and that rocks. And I don't know if you guys know this, but you can also set a specific place to be a private place. So like I have my home address, and whenever it sees that I'm at home, it changes me immediately to a general location. So it'll say Rockford, Illinois, rather than my exact address. So you can also set, I think you can set up, it's not specifically for like your house, so you can set up as many private locations as you want. So if you go, if you're at, you know, work at them, you don't want that to show up, you can, you know, once you check in, it'll just check in, you know, at, you know, whatever city it's in. And then only your trusted friends will be able to see where you are exactly. So you just got to be careful with the trusted friend thing, I guess. And what were we doing? Oh, we were getting ready to leave.
Yeah, and another 15 minutes of closing the show.
Yeah. All right, so picking up, so Bill Palmer from iProng Magazine at iProng.com, and who's on the cover right now of iProng Magazine?
Well, you know, believe it or not, Dilbert is on the cover. First time we've ever put a fictional character on the cover of the magazine, but Dilbert just launched as an animated podcast a little while ago, so we interviewed the Scott Adams, the creative Dilbert, and we've got one of the Dilbert characters on the cover using an iPod, which is cool. Drawn by Scott Adams, so it's pretty cool. But I just want to say real quickly, I thought Jeff said he was, momentarily I thought he said he was going to a party dressed as MC Hammer, which I thought would have been much more fun.
the parachute pants.
Yeah, I mean, he follows us all on Twitter, so we could even get tips from him on how to dress like him. You know, maybe next year.
Tips on how to dress like MC Hammer from Jeff Gamet. I love it.
Or from MC Hammer.
You should do it. You should start posting on Twitter as MC Hammer.
He's on Twitter. I'm going to direct message him and say, you know, he's following me and 7,000 other people. But at least I think it might. Maybe not be him, or who knows.
Jeff, you should be. You should sign up as another account for a fake MC Hammer, and
you know, because I would make such an awesome fake MC Hammer.
Well, yeah, you know so much about him. You studied him in college.
Was that a class?
It was a class. Yeah, parachute pants.
For this stuff to work, it has to be so completely random like that.
Exactly.
Like, why the hell would he be following MC Hammer, pretending to be him? I don't know. Well, okay, let's do it. You know, fake Steve Jobs wouldn't be as funny because you know Steve Jobs. But,
yeah.
You know his MC Hammer, I'm telling you.
Yeah. So that's iProng.com, and you're also on Twitter at twitter.com/BillPalmer. Yep, Bill MC Hammer and Bill Palmer. Follow him. You know, as Bill or MC Hammer. Of course, Adam Christensen from the MacCast at MacCast.com and on Twitter at Twitter.com/MacCast. Thank you so much for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks again for having me. And I do need to, I have to make a correction on my pick because I realized this. So I'm going back there real quick. The app is actually called Crazy Pumpkin, not just Pumpkin.
One word or
the
two.
iPhone, you know, the icon can only show so much text. So.
Yeah.
I was looking at that, but on the App Store, it's called Crazy Pumpkin.
So. Gotcha. Cool. Thank you for correcting that. And Daniel Brusilovsky of the Apple Universe Podcast at appleuniversepodcast.com. And he also does stuff for Quick, and that's QIK.com. You can get your, if you jailbreak your phone, you can certainly get Quick on your iPhone and sign up there. I think you can sign up, everyone can register at this point, right?
Yep, it's anyone who has an internet connection can register for a Quick account.
Cool. And, of course, on twitter.com/DanielBRU, you can follow him there.
You can follow Quick on Twitter, twitter.com/QuickQIK.
You doing anything else these days besides school and Quick and the podcast? Are you still doing stuff for Twitter or...?
Yeah, so I actually have my own startup called Teens in Tech, and I'm also organizing a conference called the Teens in Tech Conference, which is January 31st at Microsoft in San Francisco. And then I also have my consulting company, and of course I have school, and I'm still blogging, so I'm very busy lately.
I wish I had as much enthusiasm as you did, because I just end up sitting around all day playing Hamster Battle.
And you play it very well too.
Oh, I am nowhere as good as one of my friends is. He has an unnatural ability for playing Hamster Battle, and I strive to beat him one of these days. So he knows who he is.
Probably. My biggest problem with Hamster Battle is that I'll be playing, but then there'll be like two or three people iChatting me at the same time. So I'll be carrying on all these other conversations.
Oh, you can't pay attention to iChat. The key with Hamster Battle is you don't pay attention to anything else, and you have to get some really good music like Justice or Does It Offend You? Yeah, something really electronic or like Daft Punk or something, and listen to that at full blast and play Hamster Battle. That's how you get in the mood for the Hamster Battle.
Okay, so clearly this is why my hamster ass keeps getting blown up. I keep taking my eyes off of that and answering people in iChat.
All yeah. Right. Yeah, you gotta pay attention to your little hamster. So for those who didn't catch it, we're gonna start doing Hamster Battle stuff before the show. You can follow me at twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, and I'll be tweeting about when we're doing a pre-game of Hamster Battle, or if I'm just kind of wasting time during the day and playing Hamster Battle, I might throw out a tweet and you can play against me. And keep me entertained and away from work, so that'll be awesome. And with that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is out the door.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
An iPod.
A phone.
A phone.
A phone.
And an internet
community.
This
stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do?
So what are we going to do?
Made on a Mac, motherfucker.